Today on Talk About That, John has trouble describing himself in an interview and consults his inner committee. Meanwhile, the Vols break the curse against Florida, and I accidentally write the premise for a new sitcom. Plus a conversation about vulnerability, community, and what comedians and cavemen have in common. Today's episode is not sponsored by Listerine. That burning sensation in your gums lets you know it's working. It's go time.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
They said it couldn't be done, and here we are doing it yet again. It's Talk About That. I'm John with Johnny.
No one said it couldn't be done, John. People have been really supportive.
They should have said it.
Someone needs to say it.
It's not too late. You know, do you ever wonder, like, do you ever get ashamed because you can't quit?
What do you mean?
Like, do you, like, keep going
that
on
something? That I'm too legit to quit?
I'm too legit. That you're like...
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'll keep going in good things, but it's like they're not doing that great.
Diminishing returns,
yeah,
as it were.
You get those people out there like, you know what, man, I just want to make sure I'm focused on the one thing.
Yeah.
I want to be on the one thing, and on that one thing, I just put everything else as just distraction. I just put it to the side. I'm like, I don't do that very well.
Yeah.
Like, I just stick with all the things.
Or like knowing when to quit something. Didn't C.S. Lewis have a quote about like, everybody wants progress, but if you're going the wrong way, the most progressive man is the one who turns back soonest. You know,
come on, guys.
Like, you got to know when you're like, this isn't progress anymore.
And that's a wrap, guys. We're out.
I thought you were saying that was where I was like, it didn't even rhyme. That's not a. You don't know anything about rap at all.
I don't think you know how C.S. Lewis rapped.
Yeah. Hip hop legend C.S. Lewis, of course.
Yes, of course. No, I mean, it's very true. That's what I'm saying. I don't know when to turn around often.
Won't that preach?
The Six has the inner committee. Like, you have all these different voices going on. And everyone has that.
Is it an itty-bitty inner committee? It is. That could be a title for a book right there.
Wow. Yeah. They don't feel that itty-bitty.
Yeah.
But when they – you ever seen those commercials? Like,
yes.
The one for the – it's real estate, and she's shopping for a house – and she walks in this boardroom, and there's like a table full of herself.
Oh,
she's
no.
She's like, all right, positive me. Let's get a take. She's like, I think I could really work out, you know. And like, and it's like, what about worried me? He's like, well, have you thought about all the, you know. Of course, we knew you were going to say that. Like, it's just very funny. They all start chanting me at the end. It comes back out, and she's at her phone clicking, you know, applying for a home loan or something, you know.
But it's all very like, yeah, it scratches that itch of everything being about you.
Well, but what it's saying is inside there's and there's actually a bunch of commercials when you start looking like that. There's also a Nissan commercial where there's four of her riding in the same car. One of her has like glasses on. She's like, and she's the nerd.
It fills all the roles of your personality.
Right. It's like, you know, what? Where's the Wi-Fi? You know, in here. What's the password? Right. You know, and the other person's like, yeah, remember when we did this? And she's all the fun one. And so, like, the Nissan Rogue or whatever gives you all those.
Yeah,
it touches all the parts.
Checks all the boxes.
Right. Yeah, I have those things, and I don't know, like, it's hard to know which one of those parts to listen to, so I don't know if you ever feel that way.
Some of you think we should quit the podcast, and we're not going to do it.
I'm not going to do it. There's a part of me that says, you can't stop me.
We're the nerd in the Nissan Rogue.
Right.
We refuse.
That's the only part we have.
We're not any fun, but we're not going to stop.
Right. We're just going to keep badgering you with these recordings, but to be honest with you, it's kind of on you. Because if you're hearing this right now, you chose to listen. So.
It sounds like a will. If you're hearing this right now, something awful has happened.
Yeah, I actually went to a meeting. I don't know if I talked to you about this. I went to a meeting with some really amazing people that do like platform development for authors and different people.
Yeah.
We had like a 2-hour work session on this whole idea. And I'm like, and not in a good way, I'm like the worst nightmare for these folks, because they always start in a, and I'm very suspicious of it. Like, okay, I want you to, we're going to make this one sentence. John helps X.
Oh. I'm going to sum you up.
Do Y.
Yeah.
Through the process of Z. Whew. Let's now, what is the thing? What is the thing?
What if you just went, yes. That's exactly how I would have put it.
And I'm
I use letters. The last letters of the alphabet. That's how I help people.
Right. I help X all the time.
If you're on Sesame Street, that's probably true.
Yeah.
I use X to help Y and accomplish Z.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And they, I'll put it this way. We needed the full 2 hours. Like, I was like.
Because you do so much. Is that what you're saying to me?
I can't put myself. Yeah. It feels inauthentic to the committee. To like just
this
go,
feels like they were really exhausted. With
oh,
you by
probably
the end of this 2 hours.
Well, I really like these guys.
Guys, how long do you have? Because when you're talking about what I do,
it really wasn't like that at all. I was like, guys, I don't do probably anything well, but I don't. It feels like I'm denying some part of me.
Yeah.
To just say what I do is I just write.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't just. That's not all I do. Or even to say, hey, I just write about racism. Well, I don't do that.
Right.
Like, as a collaborator, I write about 1,000 different things. Or I just help people as a pastor. Well, that's not the only thing. Obviously, I don't help a lot of people.
No.
You know, if you listen to the last episode, some people think I'm not even a Christian when I'm, because I'm a pastor. And then, like, or I just do a podcast about what? Well, about that. Like, we intentionally have an open-ended conversation. And I spent my life trying to nail down what those things were in order to fit into those kinds of sentences, you know? And it doesn't, not only does it not work, if I do just pick one thing and try to focus on it.
So you would say that you're a mile wide and an inch deep. Is that what you're going to say,
John? That's what I'm going to say. Hey, they did come up with a term for me.
Okay.
Well, one, I even dropped the Bible on them. They're believers. I was like, hey, okay, how would this sentence work out for David? Look, I'm no David. I'm not close to David. I'm just saying, like, how would you diagram David in this sentence? Well, you can't just say David is a what? He helps who? I mean, David is a shepherd. David is a king. David is a lover. David is a poet. David is.
Did you tell those people that you were a lover?
A warrior. Guys,
did you?
I'm all these things.
Especially that third one.
David. Yeah, that's why I broke into Whitney Houston.
It's all in me. Anything you won't run now. I'm doing naturally.
It got weird. They were don't call us. We're gonna really chew on this for a while.
Yeah. we're gonna see a lot of other people who don't call themselves lovers.
You know that security code that we gave you to get you into this building?
That was a one-time use.
That's been changed. John, I'm a lover and a fighter. Why can't you be both? You know what I'm saying?
That's true. Yeah. Well, not at the same time. That'd be weird. That's be weird for everybody.
Pretty sure they'll prosecute you for that. But
yeah.
It wasn't really fast. Actually, we got a lot of places. You know what they came up with for me? It's like, well, because of what you do as a collaborator.
You're a Renaissance man. That's what you were trying to say.
No, I didn't want to say no. I was just like, I just think.
Wait a minute, you don't think. You think Renaissance man is more pretentious than what you said? I didn't want to say Renaissance man. That sounds horrible. What I said was, I'm King David.
Hold on, I can't breathe. I didn't say that at all. Yeah. Listener, I didn't say that.
Okay.
And I didn't even mean that. I just meant like, whatever happened to the idea. I did say whatever happened in a previous call to the idea of a Renaissance man.
Yeah.
Why do we have to, this is like, okay, sorry, leadership people out there with podcasts much larger than ours. I understand you're really great at what you do, and I'm jealous of you.
Yeah.
Not that your podcast is larger, but that it's all so simple.
Well, or some people just pick a lane. They just pick a lane and they go, I'm going to go deep into this subgenre of things.
Yeah, like you have clarity on.
They find a niche.
You have clarity about your niche or your lane.
Right.
And I don't have clarity about that. Like, I've never been able, you know, I just haven't. And they were kind of like, it's kind of like what you do is you help other people in their niches and lanes. Like, that's a big part of the collaboration side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about the podcast. They were like, I was like, I don't think Johnny would have started his own podcast if we hadn't done it together.
Right.
You know?
That's for sure.
I certainly wouldn't have if you hadn't.
I've been trying to get out of this one.
Right.
You won't let me go.
There's a contract. And I'm not.
Awkward.
But, like, you know, that's good that we get to help each other. Like, I do best when we're mutually. Mutually is when you're mooching off of someone and you're both doing
it. It's mutually beneficial. two guys who are living, who are sharing like a basement apartment. It's mutually beneficial.
Right. Like both of their moms own that apartment.
We just wrote a new sitcom for NBC.
There you go. But like, I think I do best at this point in life in those places when I'm helping somebody with their story, you know? And so they actually made the sentence. It was like, it was really interesting.
They summed you up. They boiled you down.
Well, he goes, he said, say this. This is a lot longer of a sentence.
We wanted like, a couple sentences from you. You have broken
this
them.
This is a trend.
You broke our system.
It was, okay, and I would be hilarious if they listened because they were so great, dude. They're so great. John helps message bearers craft their authentic, God-given message by bringing research, good writing, and humor to help them do something they couldn't do themselves. So, but it was also like, hey, also though, for us, like that means there's nothing for us to do right now.
Oh, okay.
We want to keep talking, but like it means like there's not a key.
Right.
Go, you're helping others do the key thing.
What was the old product, BASF? We don't make a lot of the products you use. We make a lot of the products you use better.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but they felt like that there's a message, and I think I've done a few. There's things that are still brewing in me that it might be time for me to be one of the ones taking those other things. But I like doing that. So
yeah,
I don't. And the other thing, here's the term though. You know what they called me? It's like what you are. You're an expert generalist.
Yeah, jack of all trades.
Expert generalist. I was like, wow. No one's ever, like, I've wrestled with this for so long, and now I do feel pretentious saying expert.
Expert generalist.
It means you're really good at not being good at anything.
You're generally good.
You're if mediocrity can be measured, you are the highest mediocre person that we've ever met.
It's like I did a thing for a denomination one time, and it was called the General Baptist. That was the denomination.
Uh-huh.
And so when I got there, I was like, I said this in the microphone, I go, so you guys don't believe anything specific? They did not like that.
If you've ever met the General Baptist, I'm not sure that was the joke.
In general, you're not supposed to do that. No, they were good. They were good sports about it.
No, I mean,
I said it's so much better than that Dollar General Baptist. Those people, good. It's like a knockoff. That's not. Get out of here with that. DG gospel.
Dollar General Baptist. John, that's good.
You know what's funny though? What you say about that is true. When I feel the most whole in what I do, it is when I'm using my voice and my jokes and my dumb stuff that I wrote to help like an organization raise a bunch of money that'll help people.
Yeah.
So when I do fundraisers, I did a fundraiser this weekend for a drug and alcohol rehab center in Virginia Beach. And I was hearing some of the stories and some of the guys got up that have been through their 90-day recovery program and they were doing cardboard testimonies. And one of them had a sign and on one side it said 45 years drunk. And then he flipped it over and it said 5 months sober.
Wow.
And it made me cry. And it's like me being here with my dumb jokes. And then that guy gets up and does his thing. Mm-hmm. I entertain them while they ate. Then he gets up and got to tell his story.
Yeah.
And now they raised 70 grand or something that night.
Wow.
And I was a part of it. And it's just like, it feels good because that's how it's supposed to feel. That's when we're stepping into exactly what God has put there for us.
And these guys had that sort of God perspective on things.
Yeah.
Like there was something I had done, I'm not going to say what it is, that wasn't wrong or anything, but in the platform building world. And he made this comment, I also hope he's listening. He said, hey, how did that Ishmael experience work out for you?
Yeah.
It was like a really pointed, like, you know, God has a plan for your life. You're just going to have to walk it out.
Right.
You know, and the plan, I think we have to be comfortable. The plan may not be for me to ever be a hero.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to be the hero of the story. And that's what's hard when you're in, you know, you're in industries or creative endeavors that, yeah, man, I want my book to be the number one best-selling book. I want to reach millions of people. I want to reach millions of people for good reasons, not just selfish reasons. I have them both. But, you know, and if it doesn't do well enough, that's always that thing, then you don't get to keep doing it. And I had to confess that. Like, that's always for me. The book sales is less about money or the book doing well, more about it gives the credibility to get to keep doing this.
Right.
You know, like when you start feeling like something's your one shot. So I had to step back. I did that in recovery a lot. Like, this book is not my one shot. Andrew actually spoke that to me during Not So Black and White being released, because I had a whole lot happening
there. Yeah, that was heavy.
The
yeah.
biggest book I'd been a part of as myself, important topic, and I was very frustrated that my platform wasn't going to take it to more people. You know, and he finally looked at me one day. He goes, "Hey, you're aware that Not So Black and White is not like your one shot." And it really got to me, because I was like, "Yeah, yeah," but the next thing for me always feels like the big shot. Like, don't blow this. You know,
right? You're incrementally climbing,
right?
So you feel like for every level, you're like, "Oh, now I'm in a level where I'm not big enough to push this where it needs to go."
Right.
It's a big project, and do I deserve it? You get that weird, you know, imposter syndrome kicks in.
I never feel like I deserve it,
yeah,
ever. But I do feel like, will my effort be deserving of its sustaining?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I've been given something that I don't deserve. Will I do what's necessary now, not to deserve it, but to be a good steward of it, to earn the right for it to do well? And that's the whole, I think, what does God require of me, and what can I just rest in that he's going to do?
Right.
If you just sit back and only rest, like, Johnny, if you don't send an email today to your agent, if you don't send an email to a place to book a show for next year, you can't just sit around, right, and be like, God's going to just bring shows.
I'm going to let the game come to me.
Right. I mean, I gotta, you know, I can't just, and that's what, you know, they were saying, like, maybe it's not time for this particular book on this topic. You know, you have the stuff to say. Maybe it's not your time. I'm like, yeah, but if I don't write that, I'll wait forever, one. Uh-huh. Or two, I won't learn how to write that kind of book. So it's almost like I have to learn how to write those by doing those, which means I'm going to have to fail out in the open.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to, like, not be good at this in a place where you're not allowed to not be good at things.
Yeah, I was talking with a comedian named Jen Fulweiler, who's kind of become this viral sensation over the past few years, and she's newer at stand-up. She was an author and a podcaster, and now she's doing these theaters, and so she's kind of doing her first big tours, and I'm going out and I'm, as an opener for her, and she's so sweet, and we were having this conversation the other day about, like, imposter syndrome and just, like, her dealing with selling tickets well in some cities and not in others, and being very vulnerable on stage, trying to write the material now, because you write this material that gets you the gigs, and now the people come to see your gigs, and you need new material.
Yeah.
So she's trying to write, and she was feeling creatively blocked, and I was asking her, well, what did you do? She went to, like, five different therapists to get techniques to get herself unblocked. And one of the things she said to me that really got to me, she talked about, like, it's almost like evolutionary, like going back to caveman days, like being seen was the most scary thing. Because, like, a wildebeest or a woolly mammoth could eat you or whatever.
Or a woolly tooth mammoth.
A woolly tooth wildebeest. There's a lot of dangers in the old country, John. But she said, like, there's still that caveman in us that says, don't expose yourself.
Yeah.
And don't show people the ooey gooey parts of you, because they will reject you, or you're leaving yourself open to attack.
Yeah.
And here we go out under a spotlight and say our deepest, darkest in front of thousands of people sometimes. Sometimes it's 12 people. But it's always vulnerable if you're doing it right. And it's still scary, even if you're really good at it. It's still the scariest thing. And I told her that thing that we've talked about before about community, which is to be fully known is our strongest desire and our biggest fear.
Yeah.
Like, to be fully known by someone is what you're really going for. That's the real connection. But it's where the good stuff is.
Yeah.
But it's also the scariest thing to do. And why some people don't do it, it's the whole, did Thoreau, I can't remember who said it, said, most men die with their song still in them. Mm-hmm. And it's why. It's because I can't let this song out. What if it's not good? You know?
Yeah, there has to be some level. I've been listening to a lot of Rich Mullins lately.
Yeah.
And I think Rich Mullins is so good because he was aware he didn't belong here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And he got better the more broken he wrote on his way to something better. It's almost eerie, but it's almost like he couldn't. And the whole point of it was not what he wrote. It was that was actually inside. and then he was also able to express.
Right.
But by the time he expressed, he didn't care about your opinion of his expression.
Yeah.
That I think that's that entire, like, you know, you read these stories of someone who's super wealthy who towards the end of their life comes to realize that the wealth meant nothing, you know, or they misused it for the wrong reasons. And this was all that made them happy. But we all still be like, yeah, yeah, but I need the chance to learn that lesson.
Right.
It may be different for me.
Yeah. Do I have to go through the, yeah.
Like, you still want the thing that you know won't satisfy, but it's like humanity. And so when you meet or hear someone's art that are expressing, they really have that inside, but then you realize they probably don't need you to validate it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so striking.
Yeah.
That you go, you know, how do you?
Well,
know,
and that's kind of what confidence is. And if you're a speaker, it's almost like, well, this guy doesn't care what anybody thinks about him. I like him.
Right.
It's like you acquire the thing right at the time when you seem to care about it. At least now, some people can fake confidence. That's part of the deal.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before in my journey, that I feel confident in my material now enough to get through a show without just having panic attacks. But in the beginning, I knew that I had to be confident to get laughs, but I wasn't confident. So I would fake it. I would do my impression of a confident comedian.
Yeah.
So I was just an impressionist.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you get enough laughs with those same jokes, you're like, oh, these work. And now my confidence is in that. But it's not in myself, really.
Yeah.
You never feel 100% comfortable. People that feel 100% comfortable on stage, I don't understand that. Because I'm always thinking, how do I make that next group happy? What's the next thing I'm going to say? Okay, this worked, but this did. There's a monitor going on. I'm hearing it's like you talked about last episode with the click tracks in your head about the next verse coming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing that too. And you are too, as you preach. You're going, all right, why aren't they connecting? In the service, the first service, they leaned in when I said this. Why didn't they lean in this time?
Right.
And you're trying to talk yourself out of where you're going. I do that now, but there's a confidence and a swagger because I believe in what I've written that I can purvey on stage, and it makes people lean in and they go, there's something about this guy. But it took years and years and years. And now I've met comics who really don't care. And those are some of my favorite people. They're so funny because they just don't care.
And also probably not the kind of people you would have a great daily relationship with necessarily.
Right.
Maybe not.
Right. That's true. If I don't relate to people who are supremely confident,
right,
or supremely like aloof,
mm-hmm,
because like you said, that might make for a good performer and it might make for a terrible father.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm watching this documentary about Johnny Carson, who's probably one of the best entertainers of the previous generation.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt. I mean, and he could connect and he could make any act that came on his stage looked good. He knew exactly the right question. He knew when to get out of the way. He knew when to intervene. He was always had the funniest lines. He had the best monologues, and evidently was just a heel. Just cheated on all of his wives. Was such a negligent dad. No relationship with his kids. Like, just not a great guy. But nobody ever knew that because he was good at kind of covering all that up. And this was back in that generation where there's no social media,
right?
So you can just be. He's a famous person. He's untouchable. Now, we want to touch famous people.
Right.
But it's just odd to think that juxtaposition's going on where, yeah, like you said, you kind of gain the whole world, but you're like, yeah, but what's going on in there? You know?
Yeah, it's hard.
So I want to be both. I want to be like confident in what I do, but also be humble enough to go, this was handed to me. It's a gift. And off stage, I need to be able to be vulnerable and be real with people and be there for people.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks said that one time in an interview, and I'd never heard a famous person say anything like this. They said, do you have any regrets? And I think the interviewer thought he's going to say, I regret doing, you know, the Da Vinci Code or whatever. And what was the one he did? The Bonfire of the Vanities was the most famous bomb that he did. All-star cast and a huge bomb based on a book, and it bombed. He said, I wish I'd been a better friend over the last 30 years. And I never heard anybody famous say anything like that. And I don't think I've ever heard anybody since then say anything like that.
Yeah.
I wish I'd been a better friend. You're like, you're Tom Hanks.
Right.
People just are going to have to understand you got to be shooting a movie in Milan or whatever, wherever you're headed next. They'll just get it. But no, even he felt like, no, I blew it. I took advantage sometimes. And I have a friend, Jason Earls, and he said that one time in a note on our Facebook wall to like a group of comedians. And he said, don't use your time that you need to be spending with your family as an excuse. Don't use like, I've got to go write an excuse to get away from your family, and don't use your family as an excuse when you know you need to be creating something. That's the balance we have to strike. Yeah. So it's so easy to get into that thing of like, I'm here, I'm at dinner and I want to be present. But anytime I want to get out of this awkward conversation, I can be like, well, I got to go finish that sketch I'm working on, or I got to, you know, I got that show tomorrow, so I got to punch up this stuff. You can get out of it.
Yeah.
But don't do that.
Interesting.
Don't retreat.
Yeah. The balance is really hard. There is a, like, and you said the word, I mean, humility, I think, remains the central trait that still is striking to us when we see it with mixed with successful people, because I think it's so hard to maintain for all of us, much less if someone has some great, you know, societal success. If you sense humility, I think what people like about Jimmy Fallon is a perceived humility.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's what, 10 years in now, I think, to the Tonight Show.
Right. Maybe. Yeah.
And he still acts like that he's getting to do his dream job every day and he can't believe he got there. There's that feeling. He's really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, really good. I mean, the bits that they pull off and write them, you know, it's unbelievable. But when he interviews, there's that feeling, you know, that he's really grateful to be there.
Right. It feels like one of us is getting to interview a famous person.
Right. Even though he's way more talented than almost all of us.
If there's a critique of him, it's that he is too boisterous and too effusive. He laughs too hard at the joke. That's a throwaway joke that the person says, or he claps his hands and is a little bit of a nerd and a goofball.
Well, yeah, but the audience is, that's probably
the connection point.
A critique coming from professionals.
Yeah.
But professionals are not the ones he's trying to reach.
Right. That's not the ratings getter. Yeah. That's not the one he's trying to reach anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's very, you don't like Jimmy Fallon, and I don't know what
I got
to
a problem
with
Fallon, and I'm coming for his job. I don't know. Would you ever want to host a show like that? Would you think you'd be any good at it? It's really hard.
It'd be very hard. I would love, listen, I'd love to try everything.
Even when I did an interview for, because I'm thinking of launching like a solo thing that's just an interview based with other comedians, because I travel with so many other comedians.
Wow,
sometimes.
You just dropped that bomb.
But I was trying to start putting those interviews together, and I did one the other day with a comedian friend who's a dear friend of mine, and I don't know him like super well, so I thought I can ask a bunch of questions. And I remember thinking to myself, this is a lot harder than just talking to John.
Interviewing is so much harder.
It's a lot harder because I wanted to get out of the way, but then I thought, well, I need to keep this moving. So I felt a responsibility to make it interesting without steamrolling.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that with you. I just feel like I'm just going to steamroll and John will forgive me.
Well, and you know, our podcast is about to take
It's
on,
about to be steamrolled.
It's about to take on
some
new partnership. I'll put it that way.
Mm.
And one of the questions in our conversations that we've really been evaluating how listeners feel about the podcast. And there are times we have guests on. Those are often not our highest downloaded episodes because it gets so crowded with two of us plus sometimes one to two others. And we still do that. But it's just one of the things that it's more natural for us to have the conversation that I think we're both kind of deep relationship people.
Yeah.
Like it's so funny. It's some of the hallmark of a six is that you might do small talk, but it's not like it feels inauthentic. Like you do it, but I only feel inauthentic. I'm fine with small talk with people I don't know that well. Small talk with people that I'm supposed to know better than this, or we've known each other long enough, we shouldn't be having just small talk anymore, now feels inauthentic. That's the way it is for me.
Right.
Like if we just only have shallow conversation about the game and never have another acknowledgement of anything else in life, then at some point I start to become suspicious of this relationship or this friendship. And I'm learning to have levels. Everything is not the center of the circle.
Some people, small talk is like a love language almost with them. They feel engaged by it or whatever, or they feel like left out if they're not just like, or they just love talking about the weather. It's not small talk to them.
Exactly.
It's big.
And I have to be okay that they're made differently than me. Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that to them. necessarily. Right. That's been where I think
the world does not revolve around you, John. Is that what you're discovering?
Well, I mean, I discovered it does.
Oh, okay.
But that I'm wrong. So about that.
That is, you know what's funny? You mentioned the game. We've not mentioned the game.
What is happening? How much we've grown.
We didn't even take the chance to say that UT beat Florida.
Early episodes of this podcast would have focused the entire podcast on that one thing.
Well, what it would have been the week before would have been the lead up to it and right. the imminent dread that we're going to somehow lose the game.
Okay, did you not have the same dread?
I had the dread the whole game.
Because everybody...
It ruined the game because everybody that was not a UT fan was texting me, dude, what an amazing game. And I said, you don't understand.
It's not over.
It's not amazing. It was awful. Because I kept waiting for the bottom to drop out every time.
But even beforehand, this is the forecasting, everyone picked us to win. Yeah. Some picked us to win by like 17.
Right, right, right.
And you and I were texting each other like, where are the people with brains?
Mm.
Like, until we actually beat Florida a few times, everyone shut up.
Yeah.
Like, you should just be humble. And then I said also, though, Florida gets picked every year to beat us, and then they just do it.
Yeah. So if you want to be in those conversations, you're going
to have to be okay to get
picked. You got
to
win the games you're supposed to win.
Right.
And we did, but I'm telling you what, they made it interesting. It came down to the last play.
We were up by 17 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And then...
We found a way.
We found a way to make it close somehow.
You know, I'm going to say this.
Okay.
Florida found a way too, though. And this is what I said Sunday.
They made plays.
I said this last Sunday at the church. I did talk about football a little bit in my sermon. And everyone,
my sermon's entitled, Florida Finds a Way.
I was like, what happens with Florida is... Like, suddenly we can't walk and chew gum at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and they trip over their shoelaces and accidentally score a touchdown.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you realize 2 out of the last 5 years, they've won on a last play, like Hail Mary or pass, that we should have easily defended or been able to tackle somebody.
Yeah.
2 out of the last 5. And there have been others, and I read some articles on like all this, like... It's insane how suddenly
we've been very snake bit.
The rules of gravity don't work anymore.
It's like that gator on the helmet is worth an extra touchdown in our minds. It's like a mental block.
Like Felipe Franks, their quarterback, who honestly was not that great, looked like a Heisman candidate against us. And same thing this time. Anthony Richardson had a horrible. He had a good first game, and then horrible the next two. And he has Johnny 453 yards.
That's a lot.
He threw against us.
Yeah.
Our
vaunted defense.
And then
vaunted anymore.
I'm not going to call out the name, but there was one guy I was sending you, like the guy is the, in two plays he missed 3 tackles somehow.
Yeah.
In 2 plays he missed 3 tackles. Like he went after the quarterback, missed him.
Yeah.
The guy threw the ball on a fourth down conversion. They converted how many fourth downs? 5, I think?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. So then after he missed the quarterback and allowed the guy to complete the pass, then he went to tackle the guy he threw the ball to. He missed that tackle, too. And then I was like, guys, someone, and of course, you know.
If it had been you, you would have made that.
I would have made that tackle.
Can we tell the story of the time that we were playing football in the churchyard, and I catch a pass, and I'm running. You're the only one standing between me and the end zone.
It's like all the kids cleared out because it was like John on Johnny.
I'm probably 260.
You're easy.
Easily 265, maybe.
I was probably 160.
Yeah. And you're there to make the open field tackle.
It was like a slow-mo movie.
I think I lowered my shoulder and I pancaked you. You fell down flat on your back, and then I literally like walked over you, like Allen Iverson walked over the guy Ty Lue in the finals game. I walked over you and then walked into the end zone.
It was legendary, and the kids never let
it was
me
a moment
that down.
You had to stop being youth pastor.
I wasn't a youth pastor yet.
Oh, okay.
We were just youth leaders. It was in Knoxville.
It's amazing you got the job after that.
I turned around.
The kids still respected you,
and yeah, you absolutely just leveled me.
That was a big moment for me.
Why?
I was not an athletic kid growing up, but
Johnny,
I was like, you know what?
But neither was I, so
that's
why
true.
Was that such a big moment?
I just don't know. It's just
I'm going to go flatten this guy 100 pounds less than me and like, what, 6 inches shorter. I'm just going to run him over.
I get it. I see
and why
now.
I couldn't just wrap up your legs, I'm not sure, but your legs came over me like the legs of a dinosaur or something. It was just like, it was like these were unstoppable. You really did. You just...
They call me old dinosaur legs to this day. I'm a woolly tooth mammoth.
Jeez, man. Yeah, that was...
Yeah.
And you know what you were thinking in your head, like, I should have played football. But what you weren't realizing was someone else would have tackled you.
Yeah.
It was a bad...
Other people. Anybody with any football skill at all would have brought me down. It was the exact right person that was
anyone,
in my way.
Anyone, a small child, anyone, really. a puppy could have tripped you, anything. That's how it felt.
A tree root, had it been in my way, could have stopped me.
A pebble. It was a strong breeze.
Yeah.
No, you know, that's how you feel about Florida, like suddenly. Uh-huh. And when they recovered that onside kick.
Right.
We should have won by 17 or more. And then they came down and scored, and now, but inexplicably, they just kept going for two when it didn't matter. He could have cut it to 10. Instead, he tried to cut it to 9.
Right.
And it was like,
make no sense.
Well, because he thought he was going to win now on a touchdown and a field goal. But it's like, yeah, this is too early to make that call. Like, try to get the one you got twice. So then, because he did it the first time, he had to do it the second time.
Yeah.
And they missed on both 2-point conversions. And so now, we should have won by 11, which is an odd number to win by.
And it was what the spread was. So all the gamblers were out there
they're
going.
They're freaking out. Yeah. I think it was 10.5, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was 11 by the start of the game.
Okay. And by the way, Ramel Keaton, who is basically the backup, he's a senior year, and he's a great receiver. But he had his breakout game finally, and I actually called it. I was like, Keaton has to have a big game because Cedric Tillman is our lead. I mean, he's like all SEC.
Right. Best player, probably.
Unbelievable player. And he's out with a knee injury, not for the season, but for a few games, probably. And I hope we have him back for LSU. But, bro, Ramel Keaton, that's the best catch I've seen a Tennessee player make in maybe 5 years. I mean, he stretched out for that
ball. Where he laid totally out and still tucked the ball. Unbelievable.
I mean, perfect catch.
It was the kind of play Florida usually makes against us.
Would have made against us. And
we were Florida in this game.
Hendon Hooker.
Yeah.
He's like truly in the Heisman conversation, which I'm also nervous about. It's still
only
four games.
Yeah, it's going to happen again. The Peyton Manning thing's going to happen again where he doesn't get it because we're.
Peyton Manning would have got it if he'd beat Florida.
Yeah, it's true.
He did win the SEC that year.
So you're saying he only has himself to blame and he'll never be anything?
No, I'm saying like, unfortunately.
Are you saying Peyton Manning's not going to be successful?
Guys, bring Peyton on the podcast. I want to talk about this. No, I'm saying that, and they said it the other night, like, no matter how good you are, if your team is not in contention, then you're probably not going to win the Heisman, which I think is kind of garbage because it's not supposed to be a team award. It's supposed to be who's the best player.
I could see losing two games or three games would knock you out, but just losing one key game shouldn't knock you out. Unless you just throw five interceptions.
But in the SEC, if you're up against, Bryce Thompson, right?
I don't know.
What's his name? The quarterback who won last year.
Bryce. Is it Bryce?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know, John.
Guys, I'm sorry. Heisman winner 2021.
Siri, who won the Heisman in 2021?
Bryce Young. Sorry, I said Thompson. My bad, guys, Alabama fans, but I'm not a big fan of Alabama, but amazing player. Okay, Johnny has started.
I asked Siri something, and then they started playing this song.
Anywho,
I think it's Billie Eilish. Anyway, all right.
If Bryce Young,
Billie Eilish was quarterback of the Alabama Crimson Tide.
If Bryce Young and they've gone, 11-0,
right?
And Tennessee has gone 9-2 at that point, or so, or call it more realistically 8-3 or something. And they have the same yards. Like, you're going to give it to the guy who, in theory, won more games. Now, he's all surrounded. He is surrounded by five stars. And rounded. But like
kids with dinosaur legs, probably.
When one five-star gets injured on their team, there are 2 5-stars backing up the 1 5-star.
Yeah.
On ours, we have like 2 5-stars.
So you're saying we need to recruit better?
No. I'm saying that I think Nick Saban made some sort of deal with the devil. And I'm not sure. I mean, do you not believe that?
I don't know.
I mean, it's one of those. It wasn't like the one you said where you're like, you can learn guitar chords. No. Immediately he started winning.
Yeah,
and
he did.
Maybe he's a better coach, but I like.
Well, I mean,
this
I think there's
other
no doubt
spiritual
at this point.
Conspiracy
Saban's
theory.
The best coach ever, probably.
I think this other spiritual conspiracy theory makes better sense to me. I mean, if I want to follow along with sort of the way our nation tends to process information and facts right now,
right,
it'd be easier to say that Satan made a deal with the devil than to just say he's a much better coach.
Fulfilling
and he works
harder. The prophecy, he'll open the seventh seal.
Right. And then Bryce Young will come running out with a basket of
and then
locusts.
Billie Eilish movie music will play. That's fine.
I'm just kidding, guys. I don't think
Saban is fine. Please get Aflac. Protect yourselves.
Sorry. I do like that commercial where he's like, you hear that goat.
Yeah.
He goes, is that a goat? And it goes over. Have you seen this?
Deion Sanders go, you're talking to me.
Doing me, and he's like, ding, and he has a little, I want to do a video where like
there's
our
a gleam on your,
our teeth are the ding.
I don't think my teeth are white enough. My teeth are clean, and well, I have good teeth.
Well, they add that in,
they're straight.
You don't have to do the ding.
Oh, it's not.
No, it's like
you can't get your teeth
animated.
White enough to actually gleam?
No, I've never seen it. Okay. I guess if you
I've been wanting something I can't even have then.
If you shone or shone a light. Wow, that's a tough one. If you shined a light.
Yeah.
Shone.
You shone bright
shorn?
As the sun.
It's,
no,
it's got to be shine to the.
So you add that in post.
It reminds me of.
We need to add it to the podcast.
Ding. Well, now that we have video, we can. We're not going to.
All right, fine.
It's not too late. I mean, if you want to learn how to do stuff.
Thanks for listening on video and watching on video. If you're listening and watching there. It's available for
you. I
feel
that you're thinking. Like
I'm overthinking this?
No, that you're thinking people that don't exist. But I could be wrong. Guys, prove us wrong.
Yeah.
Go to
Subscribe.
The YouTube channel.
Go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com where you can find all of our archived episodes. Over 200 of those bad boys.
Boy, they're piling up, man.
The only thing to do is to start whittling down that by listening.
They're piling up faster than Tennessee's wins.
You can't. 4-0, John.
Technically, they're piling up at exactly the same rate because we both do that weekly.
That's true. It's every week. 4-0, though? That's a lot to live up to.
First time since 2016.
We're going to beat LSU? No.
I feel good about it.
Because this will come out the week. This will come out the week after that.
I feel good about it because we have the bye week.
I'm going to hopefully be in Cancun. You're going to be in Amelia Island when this comes
Anna
out.
Anna Maria Island. Yeah.
Anna Maria Island. Is Amelia Island
a
thing?
Another one, yeah. Okay. Yeah. We don't go there. They're mortal enemies.
Oh, really?
Oh,
they have
gosh.
A land
like
war?
Pirate ships. And
interesting.
Yeah. But it's I do feel good. I think I'll be watching LSU game at the beach. That's a dream, by the way. When I ever got to watch a UT game at the beach,
yeah.
Like the level of relaxation, unless we lose, and then it ruins the whole vacation.
Right.
I'm just kidding.
You go punch a wall. Knock down your daughter's sandcastle. That's what you get.
Next time, you'll think about it or whatever.
If you could catch a ball. Oh, sorry, Sadie. I didn't know I was talking to you. Daddy blacked out for a second. But hopefully when this comes out, we're going to be in, both of us will be in respective paradises.
You realize if we go 5-0,
yeah,
we'll probably be a top, because we're now number 8, we'll probably be a top 5 team heading into a top 5 matchup with Alabama.
I don't like that.
Next week.
Don't like that.
At home.
Oh, it's at home.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could checkerboard again, the stadium. Whew. And I think they go Smokey Grays that game, or
and
they go.
We cut the head off the serpent.
I think we already. I think that was the alligator.
Oh, okay.
What do you really do? You cut the head off the. You don't want to say elephant because I love elephants.
Yeah, why would we do that?
Right.
But they do have fine ivory that can be used for things.
That's true, but.
But that's illegal now.
We cut the head off the wave. It's a tide.
It's a. We stop the Crimson Tide.
Don't isn't Crimson Tide
which is what they're trying to do now with this hurricane?
I was gonna say,
stop
it doesn't
it,
bring in the Crimson Tide into
like it's weird because the Crimson Tide is blood, right? Isn't that it's a reference to war, right?
I don't know if it is or not.
Crimson Tide is the wave of blood.
Well, you have a green, you know, like in Nashville, there's Gallatin is a town north of Nashville, and it's the Gallatin Green Wave.
Right.
I don't think that.
That's
meant-
no, it's bile. That's. They, they're the, going to punch you right in the liver.
And then you just...
You vomit bile.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a move that those
they
kids...
really thought it...
You would think they'd be undefeated, but...
No.
No.
You ever... Yeah, it's slippery stuff out there.
Anyway, we're going to stop the Crimson Tide. I think this is our year.
Ooh, Johnny. I think...
This, I said it.
Okay. If we beat LSU, we'll talk then, because...
Place your bets, gentlemen. It's a Johnny W. lead pipe lock.
We're going to have to tackle a little better. Than the last game against. Look, the only hope at that point is to just outscore them. It's just going to be outscore people. So
yeah.
We can do that.
Wait a minute. You have to outscore people to win?
If they I know. We haven't had coaches that realize that.
Okay.
Up to now. Like, they're no. We're going to hold the ball.
Let's run
and not
up
lose.
The middle again.
Right.
Yeah.
And if we just hold the ball longer than them, you know, and that is a way you can not lose and technically win. But Heupel's like, you know what we're going to try to do? If we have 30 seconds left, we're going to try to score again.
Would you say he's living up to the Heupel?
Come on, guys. That is a
Won't
homophone.
That?
I think because they're spelled homonym? Different. They're spelled different. Guys. We know that regardless of what we forget on the show, that you remember every week to listen. It means a lot. So make sure you check out that website, talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
go to our link trees. You can find all about us, John's books, my dumb social media. Follow me there. I got a new camera, so I'm taking new photos on Instagram. Follow my dumb memes and terrible photography on Instagram.com.
Yes, yes. That's a great pitch for all of that. Be listening for new and exciting information about the podcast. Also, had a new book come out a few weeks ago that I collaborated on called More Than Your Number. By Beth and Jeff McCord. It's if you want an introduction to the Enneagram, or you're an Enneagram enthusiast and you're thinking what's next, it integrates a lot of the internal family systems sort of language into the Enneagram in a gospel setting in a way we kind of talk about sometimes on the podcast. So go check it out, man. Go to Amazon, leave them a review. It's a great book. Really proud of that book and excited for the McCords to become great friends. So,
yes, sir.
Got another book coming out next month I'll tell you guys about as well, with some really, really amazing stories. So, you know, stuff's always happening. Check out Johnny's Dry Poppin'. Bar. Man, Johnny's Dry Bar is blowing up.
So many clips. Search me on YouTube. So many clips.
Search him and know
him. If you
him.
Follow me on... to try me. Know my mind. If you search for me on social media, though, like I put out like two new clips a week now. So they're really coming out at a very consistent clip now, in addition to a podcast episode. We're the hardest working men in showbiz.
Hey, guys.
Over here.
I mean...
James Brown? Hardest... No, thank you.
No, yeah. Yeah.
John and Johnny.
We're getting it done. We're getting it done.
No one like drapes a cape over me when I get done with my performance like James Brown, though.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be something, like a little pizzazz? You hire a guy just to do that.
Yeah.
He's just the cape guy, then he just gets in an Uber and goes home.
Yeah. I'm down for it.
Okay.
Him and the capo boy. Mm-hmm. Brings out the capo and you're good.
Three key changes.
Yeah.
He runs off.
Hey, guys, we're running off as well. So we'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
God's Word will change our life, but sometimes it's hard to know where to start. Well, that's where I come in. I'm Jody Nisnik, host of So Much More, Creating Space for God, a scripture meditation podcast. And each week, I guide you through a scripture, giving you space to listen to the Spirit and pray about what's on your heart. Then we have a thoughtful conversation with guests to help us go deeper. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.